We follow a sports team daily.
How many times have you fallen in love before you met Brittany? Like, we all, that's what happens.
That's where we're going.
Well, I'm saying, I fell in love. Oh, that's the wrong one. God damn it. Fell in love. Oh, that's the wrong one. God damn it.
You know damn well I went to a religious college. You know damn well.
Yeah, Matt taught me far too much about his schooling one night.
I am a Bible minor.
Even that don't work because romantic relationships make way more sense than following a sports team.
That's a good point. Down.
So,
well, romantic relationships make way more sense than the Sacramento Kings do.
Yeah. But let me ask you, we still have Matt, right?
I don't know. It's up to Matt. Like Matt's in overtime right now because he'll be back Thursday.
Jesse can kick me off.
I want to ask you this though, Matt. Because you said, what happened yesterday doesn't change how you feel about the future of this team. And I understand that. If I told you this is who Zach LaVine's going to be for the next 2 years, not 43 points, but just the aggression, everything on full display, 80% of the time, 85% of the time, would that change how you view the future of the Sacramento Kings?
As this group, no. But I'm proceeding with and I talked about this actually after the Cavs game too. I'm proceeding with the expectation that LaVine's going to be a king for the next 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And this is everything I want from Zach LaVine. Like, I don't care about Zach LaVine's defense. I don't care about Zach LaVine's playmaking. That's not who he is. He's a bucket. He's a volume scorer. Go out and shoot the basketball 20 times a game. Go out and score. And it's up to the organization, whether it's this front office or a future front office, to find the pieces around that to try and make up for the lack of talent that he has in other areas. And if it doesn't work, well, I mean, you traded De'Aaron Fox for Zach LaVine. This is what you've invited. You traded for this player. He doesn't have to be your number one guy. I still think the Kings will be searching for a number one. But until further notice, like, Zach LaVine seems like the number one guy. I don't think it should be Domantas Sabonis, no matter how much I love the dude. So surround that and let him be what we saw. Like, just let him shoot. And that doesn't mean he's not going to shoot you out of games. In case we're going to come here on this program and talk about, oh, Zach LaVine shot the Kings out of the game in the fourth quarter. Like, those moments are going to happen, but this is who Zach LaVine is. Kind of say the same thing about DeMar. This is who these guys are. So they let them be themselves. Don't try to make them into something they're not. I can kind of say the same thing about Malik. I think a lot of people are concerned with Malik right now, not the injury, but the way he's playing. I'm not. Because Malik has gone from sixth man to starting next to Fox to starting point guard. Like, he's gone through it. So I think we know what Malik Monk's...
To going back to the bench.
What, either going back to the bench as a sixth man or pairing him with a point guard. Like a true number one point guard. Even if it's a scoring guard like Fox was. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what we know that works. So the Kings have a blueprint. They can go back to that. So to me, to answer your question, KC, going forward, like, this is who LaVine should be. This is who you bought... Oh, it sounds horrible. This is who you traded for. This is who you're paying for. Go out and score and try and figure the rest out.
Yeah, they did this without Keegan Murray. I mean, it's worth pointing out. They won these two games against playoff teams without Keegan Murray. Trey Lyles, stepping into the starting lineup. You're not necessarily, no shot at Trey, getting strong offensive productions from Trey Lyles and Keon Ellis. I think Keon Ellis did a lot in these last two games to show his worth, but it is tough. Like, Keon played 36 minutes yesterday, had 2 points. Normally, that's a recipe for disaster. But you got the night that you got from Zach LaVine. You got the night that you got from DeMar DeRozan. And as you pointed out, Matt, and that's another big component that we haven't talked about because we've been yelling about coaches, is the Kings' big three. Mm-hmm. These last two games have been absolutely terrific.
Boy.
Unbelievable. Yeah, very good.
I'm
glad you brought up the defense too. Sorry, Casey, because I just want to throw this number out there because this gets lost. The Kings defense held Detroit to 45 points in the second half last night. So LaVine was cooking. DeRozan was cooking. But the Kings defense almost had a 30-point improvement from the first half to the second half. That's a big deal.
Yeah. And the other thing, I wanted to check this because I thought I heard this from Drapes and Katie, who we had fun with yesterday. I thought they were great, especially Drapes when Zach LaVine was going off.
He was
fantastic yesterday. But I thought I heard this, and I want to make sure I got it right. Didn't they say, because Valanciunas played 13 minutes, they probably did. Didn't he have at one point 11 rebounds in 8 minutes?
Oh, did he? Oh, I don't know.
Like, he finished with 10 points, 12 rebounds. He only played 13 minutes, so it probably was accurate. But to your point, Matt, and what everybody's been talking about, everybody finding what their role is and doing their job. Last night, it was for DeMar and LaVine and even Sabonis to a certain extent to carry the offensive load. But Devin Carter came in here and gave a spark. Keon Ellis, only 2 points, but his defense was fantastic. Valanciunas, only 13 minutes, but he was a monster on the boards. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody finding their role and executing it at a high level. That was just a great win as a team last night, aside from just the numbers aspect of LaVine and DeRozan.
I don't want to take over the full show, and I can't wait to come back on Thursday after whatever happens tomorrow night, because I'm very interested to see what happens tomorrow night. But I'll end with this. Casey, you're not the only one that I'm mad at. Jesse, how dare you compare me to James Harden? Never do that again. my text stands. And D'Lo, your shirt's too damn loud. That's all I have to say.
Okay. Nice well, shirt. Wait a second. Do you want to tell the story about when
Yes. Yes, I have to tell Deuce this too. So over the weekend, I'm working at ABC 10, and I go out for lunch, go to a little pizza place, and I see a guy look at me, and he like squints, and then he comes up to me and he goes, "Oh my God, Deuce Mason, what's up?" And I before I can say anything, he goes, "Man, I listen to your podcast all the time. I used to listen to Just Locked On Kings, but Matt kind of sucks."
Oh,
like he goes, "Matt kind of sucks now. I love your show though. You and I didn't know what to." I was like, "Thank you." I just played Deuce. I didn't know what to do. I panicked. So I was just like,
"You should have been like, I'm Matt George."
No, because I've gotten called Deuce many times before, and the worst part is Deuce has been called me, and that's really insulting to him.
That is amazing.
That was the first time that I've been insulted about me to someone who didn't know it was me.
Come on, man. You think it was a work?
No, I think I think it was fully genuine. He didn't say Matt sucks. What did he say? He said, like, Matt's too. I used to listen to it, but Matt's too overreact. He said something like Matt's too overreactionary or Matt's too something like that. But I was just like, oh well, I'm not gonna call him out. So I'm Deuce Mason now.
Oh,
so.
Come on, man.
Well, don't if it makes you feel any better, George. Kenny and I were once confused for Deuce and Mo, and we've never been able to figure that one out.
That's a true story.
Like, we were walking the concourse of the Golden One Center, and so Deuce and Mo, and we're like, where? And we looked over, and brother's looking dead at us. We're like, hey.
Which one? But what do you do in those spots? Because, like, I kind of got recognized, so I want to be friendly. I don't want to like double down on his reason to not like me. So I was like, okay,
I would have cut a promo on him and made him hate Deuce.
Oh,
cut a promo in third person where you kept repeating your name. Well, let me tell you what Deuce thinks. Deuce thinks you suck. Deuce thinks you have a stupid haircut. So go listen to your stupid little Deuce and Mo podcast and remember that I'm Deuce. Get out of my face, punk, and keep it moving.
I should have said, yeah, we recognize you from the comment section. I'm pretty sure Morgan hates you. That's what I should have said.
Oh, that's great stuff.
I didn't know what
that's,
to do. I did
when
not
you,
know what to
when
do.
You text me, I got a story to share with you. That's way funnier than what I was expecting. That's amazing.
I have to tell Deuce, too. I texted Deuce as well. Like, I got a story for you when I see you next time.
So that's awesome. I appreciate you. Thanks for jumping on, Matt.
You're the man, Matt. You know I love you, big dog. That's what, me and Matt, we be talking sometimes, man. That's my guy, though. That's my guy.
If I ever become a head coach of anything, I know Kenny Caraway is going to hate my guts. Yep. For
Kenny going to be
Kenny? Can I coach your son's basketball team so you can scream about firing me from
Kenny,
the stands?
Sure. Kenny going to be courtside at William Jessup watching Matt coach.
I love coaches.
As long as you're making under $10 million.
If you're making $10 million, you better say it's my fault.
You know
that's,
what?
That's the whole point. You better say my bad. Not, oh, we got people that don't want to listen. And, you know, all right, bro. All right. What am I paying you money for?
You want to pay me $10 million right now? I'll let Kenny Caraway fire me personally.
That's a great point, Matt. That's a great point. We appreciate you, buddy. Thank you. We'll see you Thursday.
See you Thursday. See you at the Golden One Center tomorrow, too.
Oh, there you go. Yep. Man. Yep. That'll be fun. We won't see Michael Malone. See him, Matt. Ooh, that was okay. All right.
My apologies. Just bought a ticket. Just, you know.
Like Scott Hall. Like, hey, yo.
Remember when Stephon Marbury did that? Knicks and Lakers, and he bought a ticket set courtside after the Knicks had, like, released them or traded them or something like that. Come on, Steph. Kyrie was at game 7 of the Kings Warriors. It's not the same exact thing, but he was there.
Hmm.
LeBron was at game 5 of Bucks Suns. And when I watched that the other day, LeBron was there.
Well, I remember when Kyrie was sitting – He wasn't allowed to play because of COVID, but he had a ticket.
Yeah.
He just couldn't sit on the bench. I can't remember what it was. It was something crazy.
He couldn't play because he didn't get vaccinated,
right?
But he could attend.
But he wasn't on the bench.
No, he could attend as a fan.
Yeah, he was a spectator.
Yeah, I guess that was like his thought too. Like, how are you going to let me be here as a fan but not be part of the team?
Yeah, that was pretty dumb.
And I was like, oh, I understand the frustration in that case.
When you really,
man's low-key got a point.
I can be here courtside as a fan, unvaccinated, but I can't be on the team.
Kyrie was so like polarizing at the time. When you look back, Kyrie really exposed the whole COVID protocol thing with one gesture. Showing up to watch his team play basketball in a game that he wasn't allowed to play in. And I think it was because of the state mandated rule.
And I think they waived it for the Yankees. That was the other thing.
Because it's outside.
Yeah.
I think that was the reason.
But they are in a locker room too. Just like
that. Doesn't matter.
Turn the AC on. Turn on the ceiling fan.
Okay.
What a weird time.
Very weird. Very, very weird. We'll come back. We'll continue to talk. TC, we got you. You want to get on? You want to get in on this discussion, man?
Well,
please do.
But even in seriousness, I do want to check the temperature of like Kings fans after that win last night.
Yeah.
Because we talked off air about like, man, if they can get this one, you know, we'll feel good. So I want to see how you feel after seeing it and how the people feel as well.
It's Steve McKC here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320. Let's hear what TC got to say. Elk Grove Kia Talk Line, you want to jump in? 916-909-1320. TC, what's good, baby?
TC,
you want to try that again, dog? TC, you want to unmute us, bro? Hey, TC. Oh, word?
Hey, my bad. Listen, hold on. Hey, I did have y'all on mute, bro.
No, I know. Okay, what's good?
That wasn't me.
I know that. What's up, TC?
Just fired up, man. Listen, hey, so to answer the question, the temperature, right? The temperature is always fired up, bro, because I like these last two games. Like I said before, bro, we got to get it in. We're the 9th seed now, and we just going to have to get it out the mud, bro. We're going to be one of the scariest playing teams ever. And, I mean, anything can happen, bro. We won these two games, bro. Take OKC down or whatnot.
I think the Lakers went to the Western Conference Finals as a playing team. But go ahead, CC.
Sure they did. Hey, actually, didn't Jimmy and the Heat do that, too? Or were they AC?
Jimmy went to the finals.
Was that a playing team? Oh, that's right. Yeah. Chicago, that's right.
They went to the finals.
Yep. Well, sorry, Zach. DeMar. Damn. Anything else, CC? I keep cutting you off. Sorry, bro.
Nah, it's good. Now we'll check it out. So, and then, hey, both teams can be right, Kenny. And so Mike Brown and the whole, like, accountability, right? Not having the right players, but also you rubbing the players the wrong way, right, as a coach, though. Mike Brown, at the end of the day, bro, was a dope coach. He's a dope coach. How he coached players and all that is a different conversation, right? But he is a good coach, dog. Other than that, him holding himself accountable, I don't know if he did or not, but both can be true, Kenny. You get me? You just not right, Kenny. Both sides is true, bro.
Sure.
I said both sides can be true, but you're wrong, Kenny.
There is. Yeah, I don't even know if there's a both sides to my argument. You finally figured it out. All I'm saying is, if we're gonna say Zach LaVine is accountable,
your frustration is they're not held to the same standard,
right?
Like that. Too. So
and we don't have to go for 20 minutes again.
It's fine. It's a discussion. I mean, like the Kings won. That's our focus. But like we're you know, this is an NBA centric city. You know, Michael Malone's firing is a big deal. We've seen, you know, I would think heading into the year, all three of these firings would be considered head scratching.
Absolutely.
Michael Malone and the Denver Nuggets, Taylor Jenkins and the Memphis Grizzlies, and Mike Brown and the Sacramento Kings. I've been trying to figure out like how to work Monty Williams and the Detroit Pistons into this conversation. Mm-hmm. Monty obviously got paid a ton of money, so much I can't even remember the amount. It was so far above
like 12, 13 million.
It was like 6 years, 72 more than million, that. I think.
Yeah, it was so far above market value, so to speak. We felt like Detroit is desperate for a coach. Also, I think there's something to be said for Detroit where they might have liked the direction that they were going, and they thought Monty Williams could be the coach that put them over the top.
It was 6 years, $78.5 million.
What's the math?
That's
I can't. It's so much.
Damn it! Why
Jesse,
you asking me?
Well, Jesse, you're the smart one.
The hell? I took one math class at Sac State.
Stinger's up. But that.
Yeah, $13 million per year.
That okay? So that failed miserably after a year. And they brought in J.B. Bickerstaff with, you know, they and here's where they deserve a lot of credit. You know, they play without Tobias Harris yesterday. Tobias Harris is a guy who's played well for Detroit. They took the cap money that they had, maybe overpaid for a guy or two. They were willing to do it, at least from everything we've heard. They were willing to do it for Malik or what I think would constitute an overpay. That would have been the most money that he was offered was the Detroit contract. And They had a direction. They went with it. They stuck with it. They brought JB in, and at first it was like, oh, JB's always been a fine coach. But it's like JB is like the ultimate interim coach. Like he never sticks, and he has done, you know, a hell of a job. He should be even magnified even more because they lost last night. Good for JB Bickerstaff for them losing to the Kings
good
last
job.
Night. But he's done it's one of the best stories I think in the game this year. They're a top six playoff team. But what's the coaching discussion there? The roster is different. It's not a 10-10 comparison. It's a little bit different. But also you have the Ivy injury. You have it's not like JB Bickerstaff was without his challenges this year.
What's the coaching conversation flipping that just in Cleveland? Kenny Atkinson took them over, and I feel like they're a completely different team too now. Like they weren't
so,
this the last few years.
Yeah, like. That's true. Unfortunately for Kenny Atkinson, Donovan Mitchell, the rest of those guys there, the whole city of Cleveland, it doesn't matter yet. Mm. Like you were good last year. You weren't this good. You were. If anything else, the pressure on you now is way greater.
Mm-hmm. That is true.
Like you're a... It's a lot like the Oklahoma City argument. You know, last year, Oklahoma City, like they, man, they're ahead of schedule. I love the schedule everybody talks about. Like they're ahead of schedule, so them falling short wasn't really that big of a deal. Oh, their first time really being here, it's no big deal.
Right.
But this year, yeah, it's a big deal this year.
And this is more like a how
you're
coaches,
short of the conference finals this year. That's a big deal.
This is more like how coaches are, I guess, covered and discussed when they're fired, like nationally then. Compared to players and stuff like that, what we're talking about?
And that's more so what I'm talking about. Right?
Yeah, I think you can only have – I think with coaches, you have more of an overarching view. Like the Taylor thing, we looked at the Taylor Jenkins thing. Wow, this is weird. This is really odd. And you tapped into, you know, Memphis radio, and they're like, whoo, thank God. About time. This needed to happen. It's like, oh, they were banking on this. They're there. Mm-hmm. They're ingrained in it. Kendrick Perkins is not. You know, Malika and that crew that's on TV every day, they're not.
Right.
So they're looking at it more from this Memphis Grizzly. He's been a successful coach with them. What a bounce back from last year to this year, even without Ja being, you know, pelty for 70-plus games. Hey, it's a hell of a job by Memphis. So it's a little more confusing, whereas, and I think that – if we're bringing this thing full circle, it's our frustration with Michael Malone. Mm-hmm. Constantly referencing, you know, Sacramento, you know, taking his shots when Mike Brown was fired, not being here. You know, not that there was a point we were more surprised by Mike Brown not being fired than when Mike Brown actually was fired. Right. And that was the Indiana game.
Yep.
And so, like, it's a little more granular of approach when you're talking about the head coaches, which I think the best, I think one of the best example, and I didn't tap into Denver radio this morning. I tapped into the insiders. Cause the first I saw this, I'm getting myself was the text thread.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
Yeah.
I
checked the calendar.
I immediately went to the guys. Yeah. I immediately tapped in with the guys. Like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
And so I didn't listen to Denver radio, and I don't know if this is a thing where those guys are out there on, you know, altitude radio or whatever talking about.
Knowledge.
5280 the score.
If they're out there talking about, yeah, you know, his writing's been on the wall, or, yeah, he's kind of worn out his welcome, or, yeah, he's been short-tempered with everybody, or, yeah, guys have been saying this and guys have been saying that, and it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. And that's – yeah, I don't, like I said, that was my only argument. I know Roddy, I can't find it, but Roddy was talking about the coaches, and Matt said it too. They get held accountable all the time by the firing. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the Matt Georges. I'm talking about the Roddies. Well, they got fired because the front office didn't do their job. Or how about you're getting paid top dollar? You got to figure out a way to reach the goal, just like the $45 million a year player needs to figure out what they need to do to reach the goal. Now, me personally, a lot of the times, I'll say, hey, there's more to it than just the player needs to lead these guys here. Just like there's more to it than just the coach needs to lead these guys here. There's more than that's going on. It's a whole group that needs to be cohesive. The owner needs to be cohesive with the front office, with the coach, with the players, with all this other stuff. And that's usually like my take on it. It's not Luke Walton doesn't just suck. He may not be good, but he also didn't have the right players around him as well.
And that's completely fair.
And that's usually what I say. Or I'll have the other one. De'Aaron Fox, don't talk to me about the roster. You make $40 million. And I'll say, Mike Brown, don't talk to me about the roster. You make $10 million.
Mm-hmm. And that's I think one of the things with De'Aaron, and we'll use De'Aaron because that's our example. I'm not trying to pick a fight with De'Aaron. Another one. I'm just trying to. He's our example, right? And if you have a player, if Zach LaVine is doing what he's supposed, I'll leave De'Aaron alone. I'll use Zach LaVine.
Mm-hmm.
If Zach LaVine is doing what he's supposed to be doing on a night-to-night basis, if Zach LaVine is an efficient, because people are going to pick it apart, so I've got to lay this out perfectly because of the way people hate Zach LaVine. If Zach LaVine is an efficient 25 to 32 point per game scorer, mm-hmm. right? Or I'll say that's a dumb 25 plus points per game, 28 plus points per game. Low turnover percentage, 4 assists a game. If he's doing that, and this team is 5 games under 500, Zach LaVine can talk. Mm-hmm. But if Zach is doing the thing where he's scoring 37, 43, 10, shooting the ball 7 times, then 30, mm-hmm. then 10, then he has 4 straight games where he scores 12, don't talk. And I think that was the frustration with De'Aaron Fox, because we actually live that. We're not living that with Zach LaVine, but we're living that with De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah.
De'Aaron on the podium essentially called out the entire roster. We need more help. We got to do this. We got to do that. You just threw the entire roster under the bus. Man, you had like 19. Mm-hmm. You're not a 19-point-per-game scorer. No, you're underperforming. You can't underperform and talk about everybody else. With players, that's really easy to do. Mm-hmm. Or I should say, with players, it's easier to do. I think that's a lot harder to do with coaches. I remember the Jaden Ivey play. I can't remember the exact verbiage. I was actually thinking about this the other day. Mike said something in the post game. You might remember this because I know it really stuck with you because you hate all coaches. Mike said something like, "I told them to foul."
Yeah, they had a scenario where they were up three on that
right,
play,
right?
And they didn't foul. And I told them to foul.
But there was a specific scenario. It wasn't. I told them to foul.
If they turn their back to foul,
that's what it was. Mm-hmm. And then your thing was, well, what if they don't turn their back? Mm-hmm. And you go back and you watch that play. No one did. So you called someone out for essentially doing what you told them to do. Mm-hmm. That's where you, Mike, you've got to recognize that doesn't look good.
Right.
Most scenarios, though, with coaches. Aren't that cut and dry. Mm-hmm. And so it's harder to tell if a coach is underperforming. And we, God damn it, I'm so sorry, Mike. It felt easy here. It felt easier because we had the Duarte, we had the fluctuating starting lineup. We had the clear distaste for the way Kevin Huerter played. We had the never ending desire to keep Malik as a sixth man. Like, you know, like there were a lot of things where you point to and you just go, I mean, and Keon is the one every Kings fan and analyst will scream about, like, Mike, you weren't playing Keon Ellis. How? For what you're saying publicly, how are you not playing him? Keon played 36 minutes last night, namely because of what he's doing on the defensive end. He's played roughly 80 minutes over the last two games and I think has barely cracked double digits in points because of what he's doing on the defensive end. And Mike didn't want that out there. So with Mike, it felt like, again, we are super entrenched in this situation. Sometimes your best bet is to open the Odyssey app and go to the Denver radio stations, the Memphis radio stations, you know, six days from today, there's going to be coaches who are going to be let go. And some of them might make complete sense. Some of them might not make any sense. And I trust the people who cover the teams the closest to be able to relay that information as to why.
Right.
But it's a significantly more difficult position to judge than the one that Zach LaVine is in because he's a $40 million player, the one that De'Aaron Fox was in. Because he's a $40 million player.
Yeah, 100%. And even like you laid out the scenario when Zach is doing everything he's supposed to do and he has the leniency to be able to say something like that,
yeah,
he'll still find a way to blame you. Look at DeMar DeRozan. DeMar DeRozan's doing everything he's supposed to do.
Yeah, he's doing everything he's always done.
Always done, doing what he's supposed to do. And he the problem, or he wanted a problem.
Yeah, and I think the frustration with DeMar is people's, you know, we talked about this, it was yesterday or last week, I don't remember. But DeMar, if you didn't like the signing of DeMar, or the trade, I guess it was, for DeMar DeRozan, because you were like, well, he doesn't fit. Like, I've seen the way he plays for the last 15 years. That's not going to be conducive to the way that this Kings team plays. That's fine. You can bark and yell and scream and bitch and moan all you want to. That's perfectly fine. It's the people who were really hyped on the 4th of July or 5th of July or whatever it was. It's those people who were really, really excited. And then like, well, why is DeMar doing this? Well, why is DeMar going ISO? The man has been in the league 16 years.
Right.
This is exactly how he plays. Again, Marshall Harris does not like the way DeMar DeRozan plays. He can stand on business and gloat and have fun and get his jokes off. But if you were celebrating over the summer and then all of a sudden you expected a 16-year Hall of Fame vet to change, well, that's your fault.
I agree.
Like the person, you only have one person to blame and it's yourself. It's not Mike Brown. It's not Monty McNair. And you know, again, you... If you were frustrated to begin with, then you can blame the front office.
Right.
if Monty or Wes or the collective brought DeMar DeRozan in with the expectation he would do something different, that's their fault. If Mike Brown thought he would do something different, that's his fault.
Yeah.
But it's again, it's one of those things where it's easier to blame who you're watching execute because we may not understand the intricacies. I've always, well, one thing Coach Lawson taught me is it's really difficult to evaluate what a player is doing defensively, especially in an isolated game, because you don't know what their teammate was supposed to do.
Right.
So if now I learned with Buddy Hield, it doesn't matter. It absolutely doesn't matter. But in some cases where if you're watching a guy defensively and you don't think they're a particularly bad defender, but maybe they're having a rough night, maybe different things are happening, you have to know, well, what was the guy behind him supposed to do?
Right.
What were the other four guys on the court supposed to do? And you really have to judge. Now we're 78, 9 games into this. You know what you have defensively as players. Mm-hmm. But evaluating a player in a single game, what they do on the defensive end, can get a lot more difficult if you don't know what the defensive scheme is.
Right.
And you don't know what everybody is supposed to do. That's the one where I, like, even last year when, like, Kevin was just getting trashed for what he was doing defensively, I think we were the only ones who were like, let's let him fail for a while before we start calling him out, because this isn't a good defensive team.
Right.
And Kevin Huerter might have been a glaring problem, but he was a glaring problem on a team that was bad defensively. Mm. And we talk about hiding guys, and that's how you hide guys, is you have – a group of defenders that's good, or at least better than that one.
Right.
And this team hasn't really had much of that until, I think, this year.
Well, look, it's also one of those things where it's like, that's a great point that you brought up with understanding what's being asked of them and what the scheme is. Because we even, I don't know, I'm not in those locker rooms, but I'm just kind of using a logic. And we get frustrated with the Kings fouling 3-point shooters and 4-point plays.
Mm-hmm.
My thought process is, if they're being told to do this high five thing, that'll probably lend to that.
Yeah.
That'll probably, if that's what they're being coached to do, you're probably going to foul some shooters on three, because I think that's a foul a lot of the times, the way that it's been explained to me. So yeah, we can get frustrated. Or if somebody goes baseline, why did they give up the baseline? Well, maybe they're being taught to shift
that, yeah,
on the baseline. The help's going to come this way, da-da-da-da-da. So, yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things. Like, one of the things that I learned when or at least I was told, I don't know how accurate it is or not, but they were packing the paint a little bit more because they were afraid of not having the rim protection with Sabonis there at center.
Mm.
Well, yeah, you're packing the paint over help, you're going to lead to wide open threes. Guess what that's going to happen? You guys are going to get busted up on the regular from three from giving these NBA players wide open looks. And we get mad.
And you know why all that happened? Mm. We didn't get Mason Plumlee.
Well,
so it all goes back to it's not having the right people.
Damn it.
You know, imagine the fortunes being different if we had gotten Mason Plumlee.
You know what the Western Conference Finals matchup would have looked like if we would have just had Mason Plumlee?
That's it, just Mason Plumlee.
Damn.
Damn.
Damn. Yeah, man.
Ron Simmons, an All-American Hall of Famer at Florida State, and he's been withered down to a single word.
Well, at least we forget Farouk.
Oh, thank
God. Like the original Farouk. Not the nation Farouk.
The Blue Helmet Farouk.
That was ridiculous.
Wait, what's going on with Blue Helmet Farouk?
You never saw the original?
Being serious. The only Farouk I know is the Nation, and then when he was with JBL.
So. Bro, hold up.
Hold on.
Ron Simmons, nope. WCW champion.
Screen up. Pull up Farouk Assad, WWF debut.
This was
I want to see Jesse's reaction when he sees the debut.
This
of
is
Farouk
how I was introduced
Assad.
To Ron Simmons. I didn't even really? Know there was no Ron Simmons. This guy coming into the WWF.
Ron Simmons was, I think it was WCW heavy. I don't remember if it was WCW.
You sure someone's movie villain didn't get lost?
That's how he was introduced. Blue helmet Farouk right there.
What's that movie, Small Soldiers or whatever, with the little toys where they come back to life? That's what he looks like.
Oh, man.
It wasn't, didn't Sonny, wasn't that his, yep, his escort?
That's right.
Manager?
Yep, good.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I've never seen that.
That's crazy.
Farouk Asad. Hold up. Can we get
yeah,
this?
Yeah, man, that was... Man.
This is crazy.
And why did Sonny, did she leave Skip at the time? Like, what was going on with that?
Come on, man.
This guy was a champion and a legend.
Was an All-American Hall of Famer. Look at this one. This is even worse. Look,
I got to lose to that guy tonight.
Imagine being Ahmed Johnson. And that guy, dressed like that, just walks
what's
out
that
there
one?
And
what's
beats
that one
the
below?
Crap
better,
out of you.
Better color down. No, right on it. Yeah. What's that one? What's
this
that one? Yeah.
Oh, this.
Come on.
Oh,
man.
Yeah. Come on, man.
What are we doing?
Come on, man.
Nah, they sent him out there to embarrass him.
Farouk.
Oh, man.
That
oh,
is
man.
Crazy. If you have never seen Farouk Asad and you're a wrestling fan, go. Just do it.
How long did that gimmick last?
And then look at that guy. That guy's just a badass right there. Look at Ron Simmons in this picture, probably 40 something years old, looking like that. That's and then true. That guy.
That's no. We have Ron Simmons at home.
That is tough.
Oh man.
Damn.
Yeah, legend though. Legend.
The funny thing about
question, I don't think it lasted that long. I want to say no more than a year.
Nah, I don't even know if it was that long.
Shout out to him for having a career after that stuff.
They dropped Asad and went with the
and
you know
became a Black
the,
Panther.
That's it. He became a. It was a cross between. It was more like the Nation of Islam. It was more like the Nation of Islam.
Shout out to William Wallace. What did I just join into? We're going to get to the Kings at some point. Don't worry.
Oh, man. The funniest thing about the original Nation of Domination is like there was this little skinny white group called like PG-13 from ECW. They was like rappers. They were just like skinny white dudes.
That.
And then like Crush, who I'm pretty sure was probably like a racist biker, was in the group. It was really weird. And then they all broke off and it became Farouk, D-Lo.
Oh, look at these guys. Is that Scotty Too Hotty?
I don't even know what you're looking at.
I don't know. I'm looking at PG-13, though.
Oh, yeah. No, that's not Scotty Too Hotty. But, yeah, I can see the confusion. Yeah, I can see the confusion.
I don't remember these guys.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And then, of course, DX put on blackface and came out.
It's just hilarious. This is great entertainment.
It's always funny when Triple H does it.
They had two guys in blackface.
I'm sorry, do you not remember X-Pac? They were all in blackface. X-Pac was...
Well, X... I'm X-Pac was the worst. And Triple H. That's what I'm thinking, too.
Well, so, I mean, Billy Gunn was darkened. You know what? Road Dogg didn't. Okay. I don't think Road Dogg did. Billy Gunn was slightly darkened.
Who was he supposed to be?
Billy Gunn was the Godfather.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, you're right, three guys.
But the funny thing about the Godfather is when he did that, I think Jim Ross was just referring to him as the Godfather of the Nation. And he went out and did this over the top pimps up, hoes down. It's like he's never said anything like that before. Are you looking at the blackface video?
I am, but that's not the only one from Billy Gunn.
Billy Gunn did blackface twice? Oh no.
Just Google it.
What am I Googling? Billy Gunn
blackface TNA. I've never seen this before.
This in two promotions?
Billy. Oh, God. Billy Gunn.
Are you for real?
Blackface. TNA. Oh, whoops. That's the... Whoops.
Oh, my goodness.
That's the first one that comes up, too, when you type it.
Wow. I've never seen this before. This is...
I'm typing on the wrong computer.
They had to have scrubbed that from...
Billy...
There's no way.
Gunn. Well, we all got to see it. Hold on.
No, yeah. I've never seen this one before in my life.
I'm typing slow. Sorry, Chatty House.
You're good.
Hang on.
You're good. Oh, man.
Wait.
Just click on images.
Oh! Oh! Wow! I have never seen this. Holy crap!
Oh, my gosh.
Who is he?
That's... crazy. That is crazy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Billy, you don't recover from this one.
Well, there's the original right there.
No, that's just great. That's great.
I've never seen that before in my life.
You've never seen the DX skit?
No, the Billy Gunn.
Oh, I've never seen that either.
Referred to or nothing.
I have never seen that before.
Wow.
My goodness. Well, we'll take a break on that. Steelo and Casey.
Goodness.
More racist moments with the WWE when we return here on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320. Let's get our man Kamara in here. Haven't heard from our brother in a while. 916-909-1320 Elk Grove Kia Talk.
Kamara Sharania.
Kamara Williams, attorney at law. What's up, man?
Yeah, man. I just want to shout out that, you know, I was breaking news on
you KC. Were.
Yeah, that's the shoot. Saying, yeah, bro. That's for real. Kamara, I didn't Sharania. See it.
Let's go.
Yeah, man. You know, I guess this is the Kindler and Jettner KC, man. I expected you to turn up the petty a little bit more.
Did you not hear the start of the show?
I did, but I was expecting, like, full-out guest comedy jam, you know, Martin Lawrence, 1992.
Nah, because I don't hate Mike Malone. I think that's a misconception. Like, I don't have no problem with Mike Malone. I have a problem with one thing, the way he goes about one thing specifically. Other than that, I think he's a great coach. And he seems like a great guy. So I don't have no problem with him. I just don't like the way he went about that whole Sacramento wine and stuff.
We ain't got to have a problem to cutting no jokes, though. You can still get these jokes.
Well,
hey, man, hold up. You calling this radio station talking about Michael Malone. You don't have any thoughts on the Kings beating two playoff teams in a row?
Hey, you know, here's the thing. I refuse. This team has... Every time they wound me up to get, like, I'm back in, they bring me back down, and I'm just now, I can't do it.
All right.
So, like, I have to be emotionally just neutral with the team.
Okay.
Does that make sense? I mean, is that fair?
Nah, completely.
It is. It completely. Is. I just,
appreciate
you, Kamara. I wonder if anybody is ever really feeling that way. I think outwardly... People say, I'm not going to get invested. But they're watching the game. You say that as a defense. If you were really like kind of neutral.
Self-preservation.
Yeah. But you're not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you're invested. You may not be cheering after they make a shot. You know what I'm saying? But you're still sitting there like, even to the point where it's like, I'm not going to get hyped because I know they're going to blow it. You're already involved. You're already emotionally involved because – You're telling yourself, you're trying to convince yourself, I'm not going to get excited, even though I want to be excited.
So I don't know that I know, TC responded to it earlier on the tease, but we never did it. Like our last words to each other yesterday, mm-hmm. when Casey and I were parting ways, we kind of stopped at the door. You know, the game had already started. We were doing our KSFM stuff and we were, you know, Casey was like, man, I wonder what people will think if they win this one. Like, will people be, I mean, it's three wins in a row. You can't sneeze at the last two.
Right.
You responded after the Washington game. Like, would this get people back on board? Like it was doom and gloom three games ago. Mm-hmm. Now, the question, it wasn't a statement. It was, I wonder if this would get people back on board.
Has it changed anything for you guys?
KC temperature check.
You ready to give out lifetime contracts again? Or
no.
No.
Buddy Hield.
No, I'm not. I do think, see, I just can't, as much as I like the guy, as much as I believe in his talent, I can't trust Zach LaVine. I'm waiting for the other shoe to fall with Zach LaVine. Like, I'm waiting for that 7-point field goal performance. Mm. But if I could, that's why I asked Matt the question. If you told me, all right, whatever happened for about 3 weeks was just crazy. Like, I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
This is the Zach LaVine you're going to get. Once again, not saying 43 points, but the aggression and somebody that every day is going to be engaged in getting buckets and all this other stuff. It would change some stuff. Because if I knew Zach was going to be aggressive for the rest of the season and then hopefully two games in the play-in, I'd be like, I really do think they could get to the playoffs.
28 shot attempts yesterday for Zach LaVine, and his efficiency is just bananas. 16 of 28 yesterday.
Wow.
It's got me thinking about next season, I guess. Like, this season, I'm kind of done with the Kings in the sense where, like, I can see them going to the playoffs and I can see the first round, and then I could see them falling in the play-in. So I don't think anything they do from now on that is going to change it, really. But, like, I wonder, because I was looking at the play-in, the teams that didn't make the play-in in the West this season, like, Portland maybe takes a jump. We'll see what happens with the Spurs, Wemby and Fox. But those other teams, like, they're not doing anything next season. And Portland's like a maybe, too. Like, I wonder if you could build something with Zach. I'm not.
Let me pay this part off. You talk about the aggression in what you just said. Can you build something with Zach? 16 of 28 yesterday, 28 shot attempts. Mm-hmm. Kings beat the Pistons. 15 of 21, 21 shot attempts. Kings beat the Cavs. 9 of 19, 19 shot attempts. Not as efficient. 19 shot attempts, though, mm-hmm. from Zach LaVine in a win versus Charlotte. They lost to Washington. Zach LaVine shot the ball 13 times. Mm-hmm. They lost to Indiana by 2. Zach LaVine shot the ball 15 times. Mm-hmm. They got annihilated by Orlando. Now, there's context. Tell the whole story, Doc Rivers.
I wish you'd tell the whole story.
He shot the ball 8 times in that game. I'm going to cheat a little bit and go back one more. That was the Portland game. He shot the ball 18 times in that game. Mm-hmm. He was 13 of 18. There is something. It's not a make-believe thing that if Zach LaVine is aggressive on the offensive end, the Kings are in a better position to win. Mm-hmm. None of those. The 9 of 19 being the worst, none of those, and that's not even bad. That's a little under 50%, 47, 48%, somewhere around there. But that's the least efficient night that he's had, but he still took 19 shots, and they won. There's something to him being aggressive, especially as a guy who doesn't take a ton of bad shots, that puts the Kings in a better position to win basketball games.
That's the thing. Putting them in a better position to win basketball games, being the best version of themselves, is when Zach is aggressive. I think, because, like, it feels like 22 is a lot. Like, I'm not asking him to take 22 shots a night. But 15 to 18, like, that being what you average shot attempt-wise a night, I think I'll take that. I don't know what the record is or whatever, but it feels like when you get that, when you get 15 to 18, maybe having up it one more, 16 to 18,
mm-hmm.
it feels like that's when you get the best version of Zach.
I'll go a step further. Give me 18 plus.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Give me 18 plus.
Yeah. When you get that, I wonder. You get the best version of Zach LaVine and the best version of the Sacramento Kings. And if you told me, if Zach came on the show right now and be like, I promise you, 18 shot attempts, I'd be like, okay, all right. I feel good about this team moving forward. I even feel a little better about the future of this team because Zach promised me he would get 18 shot attempts a night. But you just never know with Zach.
Yeah.
You just never know.
I'm not Will Z, so I cannot figure this out. I was trying to get what his averages were. Will, if you're listening, if you're not working, what's the Kings record when Zach LaVine shoots the ball 18 times or more? And what are his averages? I'm trying to. It's the number is maybe surprisingly, maybe not surprisingly low. It's Zach LaVine has played 71 games this year, 18 or more shot attempts, 31 times. And just a quick look, that 13 of 18 I just referenced, 9 of 18, 8 of 18, 11 of 18, 9 of 19, 16 of 19. Of course, we talked about that game the other day. 8 of 19, 11 of 19. Like, these are efficient nights. 10 of 20, 12 of 20, 12 of 20, 12 of 20, 15 of 21, 11 of 21. Like, these are he has no 5 of 20. He does not have that. The percentage has got to be 55 or so when he shoots the ball 18 times or more.
If I have this correctly, I'm doing it on the fly, and I'm trying to have a conversation with you too, so I might be off. I think I got him at 8-4 when he shoots 18 times or more, the Kings.
Okay, so some of these are Chicago games, okay? You said 8-4?
8-4. When he's 18-plus FGAs.
Well, there's a Chicago win. There's a Chicago win. There's another Chicago win. There's a handful of Chicago losses here. Okay, let's stick with the Kings. 8-4. 8-4. But the thing that's standing out, 57%, 56, 52, 50, 50, 50, 54, 50, 54, 45. He was 10 of 22 that night. 63, 47, 61, 66, like 71%. Mm. That was the other night. Like we say this all the time, he does not force shots. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's up to the Kings. Maybe it's up to Doug. It's up to somebody to make sure that Zach LaVine gets a good number of looks and possessions on the offensive end each game.
Well, one of the things I've seen in the last three games, though, is he is taking more shots outside of just being wide open. Mm. You know, I even consider some of those step back threes is forced, not perfect looks. You know what I'm saying? That's more of a rhythm shot. You're off the bounce. You know, you got guys flying at you, switching and all this other stuff. You step back, you know, create a little space. You got to create the space. That's basically what I'm saying. It's like, you don't have the space. You got to create the space and then go up with it. I see him getting a little bit more aggressive in those situations, and he's able to hit the shots. He's been on fire. He's got that ability. But just him taking those shots is something that is a positive sign for me.
Manny,
I love seeing that.
Manny, being a regular bitter Chicago Bulls fan, acting as if this is Zach on the norm is wild. Welcome to his Chicago career. No, Manny, we're saying the exact opposite. 31 out of 71 isn't the norm. Mm-hmm. We're saying make it the norm. Mm-hmm. That's what we're saying.
Yeah.
And it's shown to be productive in the
12 games.
8-4?
Yeah.
8-4.
Yeah.
12 games that Zach LaVine has done it for the Kings. It's shown to be effective. Like, make it the norm.
And a couple of those losses were, once again, what we're talking about, it gives them the opportunity. One of the losses was the New Orleans game they lost in overtime, where he shot 24 times. Another time was the Clippers game where he shot 22 times. They lost in overtime. Like, you're giving your team the opportunity to compete essentially at a high level when you're using that level of aggression. So, yeah, like I said, I'm looking at some of these losses. Even in some of the losses, it's still they're not getting blown out and he's shooting the ball 18 times. Now, once again, mm-hmm. there's context to it. Like Orlando. Yeah, he probably going to shoot 8 times because he only played 29 minutes in that game because they were getting blown out. So he didn't really get an opportunity to get to that. So I look at Zach LaVine and I'm watching him last night. And I really wanted to like go through the individual players in the league. I don't know if there's 20 players in the league that can do what he can do on a basketball court. That have the full complement of he can handle the rock. He can shoot the ball from all three levels. He has the athleticism to finish at the rim over the top of somebody. Offensively, there isn't 20 guys in the league that have all of that in their bag. Some of it because physically I'm just throwing up a name. Isaiah Thomas. I know he don't play, but Isaiah Thomas, he can't post you up the way Zach LaVine does because he ain't 6'6". You know what I mean? So between the physical traits and the skill, there are not a lot of people in this league that can do what he can do. The frustration with him is
he doesn't do it.
Yeah. He just, there's going to be times when he just kind of falls into the background.
At this point in his career, is that something you can count on then?
No, it can't. I mean, he's been in the league 11 years. That's why I say I can't trust it because I can't say
he's going to flip the switch. Can we send Trista the link again? She can't find it.
All right, also.
I can't trust it because he's, he's going to figure it out now at 30 years old. Like, if anything, he's figured something else out, it seems like. Let me shoot less. Mm-hmm. Let me be more efficient. Let me be more judicious with the shot attempts that I take. That's what it seems like he's figured out, and I kind of want him to go back to how things were a little bit. So he's one of the top players in the league when he gets on those runs like he did last night. But that's also – and the last three games, or at the very least last two games. But that's also probably what makes him so frustrating as well as a ball player.
TK going to join us here in a minute. She's going to hate this. I can't wait to bring some of this stuff to her attention. But I don't know. We have no reason to discuss the Detroit side. But I asked you specifically before this season started. We're 100% certain Cade is a cornerstone. And you said, yeah, he is. God damn, he is. Like the steps, the growth, the leap, the jump, whatever terminology you want to use that he took this year, man, he is that. Cade is nasty. And that was on full display.
He turned it up last night.
It was on full display last night. It's been on full display this season.
Yeah.
Cade is an absolute, man, he is an incredible young player in this league.
He's the truth, man. And coming into that draft, I was one that I liked his game a lot. Obviously, he's one of the best players in the country at the time. But I like Jalen Green better. And I still think Jalen Green is great. But I don't know if Jalen Green is franchise cornerstone the way Cade Cunningham is. Cade is – there's so many things that you – he covers so many bases on a team led by him. Whereas opposed to Jalen Green, he's kind of just the scorer. You know, maybe he taps into his defensive abilities, using his athleticism on the defensive end a little bit more as he gets a little older. But Cade is the truth, man. He's the absolute truth. And I love that they don't like each other on the court. I love that.
Yeah, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
I'm all for that.